For weeks now, you've sent us pictures of things in your homes that say something about your family's place in the world. It's part of our class photo album, and you can still do that at our website. We've gotten pictures of furniture, appliances, cars, trucks parked in driveways, china cabinets, and cozy living rooms. You can see those pictures and add your own, as I said, at thetakeaway.org. But you probably didn't know that those objects don't just say something about you and your family. They tell us a little bit about American life and culture. Houses aren't refuges from history. They are where history ends up. That's the thesis of Bill Bryson. His new book is called At Home, A Short History of Private Life, and he joins us in the studio this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, as I understand it, this book, the idea for this book started with you sitting at the table staring at the salt and pepper shakers.
It really did. I was, we had recently moved back to England. I had been living in New Hampshire for 8 years, and in 2003 we moved, my wife and I moved to England, and we bought an old parsonage, and I was kicking around ideas for a book. You know, it was time to think of an idea for my next book. And I was sitting at the kitchen table, and I was just idly fingering the salt and pepper shakers, and I thought, why is it that these two things are always on every kitchen table I've ever sat at? You know, I grew up in Des Moines, Iowa, and we had salt and pepper on the table, and now I live in England, we have salt and pepper on the table. Why do we have this abiding attachment to those two? Why not salt and cinnamon or pepper and cardamom or any other combination? And then the more I looked around the house, the more I realized that there was just a lot that I didn't know about everyday life. I heard a reference on the radio to somebody paying room and board. And I thought, what is the board? When they talk about room and board, or when they talk about boarders or boarding houses, where does that come from? And so I just kind of looking around the rudiments of everyday life, I thought, there's an awful lot here that I don't know. So I got the idea that maybe I would just do a tour around my own house and write a history of the world from the perspective of each room in it.
Well, let's get the answer to the salt and pepper question first. Why is it salt and pepper, not just in England and Des Moines, Iowa, but all over the world?
Yeah. Well, not quite all over the world. I mean, there's a lot of cultures that do have other things, you know. But it's certainly in the English-speaking world and most of the European-based world, that's very much the case. And the answer really is both of them are relics of the great age of discovery. I mean, you have to go right back to Columbus and Magellan and all of those guys, when there was this huge, insatiable demand for spices of all kinds. And spices for a period of several hundred years were not just, you know, a valuable foodstuff. They were actually the most valuable commodity on Earth. They were traded, and people just really coveted having spices.
So salt and pepper shakers and nutmeg were like the flat screen TVs of today?
Yes, more than that. No, they were like gold and rubies and, wow, you know, precious jewels. And so they had a great deal of value, not just as things to sprinkle on your food and enhance the flavor, but also just as a kind of product in themselves. They could be traded for huge amounts of money. I mean, people
bragging. You left salt and pepper on your table and you're bragging.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. And nutmeg and mace and cinnamon and all of these other things. So it cost a lot of money, and you displayed them ostentatiously in the middle of your table. And really, salt and pepper are just the salt and pepper on our tables today are kind of relics of that, a sort of fossilized cultural icon. And also we have developed over time a great attachment to them. We need salt in our diet. We love salt. We essentially, as human beings, cannot get enough salt. I mean, we love to eat salt. And pepper
One of the other fossils, I mean, I don't mean to interrupt, but one of the other fossils in the American home today, in the home period today, is the hallway, which, you know, barely has a table for putting mail down, but used to be this grand kind of beginning of the house, almost outplaying every other room.
Well, more than that, it was the house, really. I mean, originally, the first kind of house there was, if you go back to the period of, like, Beowulf, it was just a single room, which was called the hall, and it denoted a kind of greatness, and that still survives in the English language in terms like, you know, Carnegie Hall or the Hall of Fame or the halls of Montezuma, or even study hall in high school. But the hall, in that sense, means a big important space, and that really is a survival of the days when the hall was the whole house. It was the house was a single room, but as houses physically began to spread out and to grow outwards and upwards, the hall itself as a room became less and less important and became more and more diminished until today, as you say, it's really just a kind of entry space.
But really, these objects that you write about, the invention of certain things, really dictated architecture too. I mean, and one of the striking stories you tell in your book is how the chimney made it possible for people to have two-story homes.
Yeah, originally in these hall houses, they were single rooms, sometimes quite big single rooms, where everybody lived together, did everything together. You ate, slept, relaxed, procreated, did everything all in the single space. And there was a single fire, an open fire, kind of like almost like a bonfire in the middle of the room. And the smoke went up into the roof space and it just sort of lingered there until it leaked out a hole in the roof. And that meant that you couldn't use that space above ground level because it was had full of choking smoke. What you needed was a chimney that would channel the smoke out of the house. And as soon as somebody invented that, and what was needed was good, strong bricks that could sustain the heat of big roaring fires, as soon as somebody came up with a workable, practical chimney, then it became possible to build upwards. And once you start putting in upstairs in houses, people develop the idea of privacy, of being able to withdraw from this single room and have space of their own.
Well, before we move on to forks, first answer that question about room and board. What is the board in room
okay,
and board?
Okay, well, originally, furnishings and household furnishings, even in quite grand houses, were very simple. And the dining surface was just a board. It was just a rectangular board. And in more modest homes, it hung on the wall. It didn't even have legs. And you took it down at mealtime. You perched it on your knees. You all sat around in a little circle, perched it on your knees.
That's now called a TV tray.
It's exactly. Well, that's the same sort of principle. And over time, board stopped being just the dining surface. It also became the word for the meal itself. So that's when you talk about room and board, you're talking about room and meals.
Okay, we only have a little bit of time left, and I want to answer that question about why there's four tines on the fork and not three or, say, five.
Well, originally there were two, and because a fork originally was just to hold down, you know, joints of beef and turkeys and things that might slide across the platter. So it was just there to sort of stab these pieces of meat and hold them in place. And when they became dining forks, they were just scaled down. But they discovered very quickly that two tines will really stab you in the lip or in the tongue. It's dangerous. So they added more tines just as a kind of safety feature. And for
protect
some
your
reason,
tongue.
Four tines is the number that we're most comfortable with.
Okay, Bill Bryson. These kind of stories fill his new book, At Home, A Short History of Private Life. And you would be fascinated. You will be if you read this book about all the different reasons why we have things like upholstered chairs and why we have dining rooms. Bill Bryson, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you.
I wonder if we don't miss those days of smoky rooms full of Beowulfs procreating and using two-tined forks.
I don't know.
Here's a great way to tell the story of your own home and life. Go get our new free takeaway app with support from the Knight Foundation while you're out and about. Send us photos, audio, and video right from your iPhone. Put it to good use right away. We've been collecting your photos of things that represent your own economic class, the things you love about your house, your home, the archaeology of your space, your cubicle, your private office. We're making a whole slideshow of it, and you can take it all to thetakeaway.org, and we'll assemble those pictures. Learn how at thetakeaway.org. I'm John Hockenberry at our partner station WGBH in Boston.
And I'm Celeste Headlee in New York. This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.